Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our special New Year feature program looking at Pope Benedict's message for World Peace Day, celebrated each year on January the 1st. Also on the programme, Living Stones in the Holy Land, what the churches are doing to try and stop the exodus of Christians from the land of Christ's birth. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Thank you for joining me. The Human Person, the Heart of Peace. That's the title of Pope Benedict's message for World Peace Day, celebrated on January the 1st. The message looks at some of the key challenges facing our world today, including threats to human life, injustices, and the indifference of much of contemporary society.
Important, I think, that we understand that peace is something that goes, is not just about war, but goes beyond that and goes into really people's hearts and into their everyday lives.
Prophetic voices, like the voice of the Pope and the prophets of old, they call our attention to real challenges. So I think by pointing to these challenges, he's telling us, especially us lay people, remember, we're the ones who are supposed to take the lead in transforming the culture. He's telling us, these are the problems, you'd better get busy.
Indifference is a paralyzing attitude, and this is a real danger because important and urgent problems of mankind are set apart and nobody wants to discuss. And so that is why the Pope exhorts, encourages to discuss and to take action.
True peace is a gift from God, but also a task demanding a personal response from each one of us. That's the theme running through this message, which highlights the right to life and the right to religious freedom as the basis of all other human rights upon which lasting peace is based.
The duty to respect the dignity of each human being, in whose nature the image of the Creator is reflected, means in consequence that the person cannot be disposed of at will. Those with greater political, technical, or economic power may not use that power to violate the rights of others who are less fortunate. Peace is based on respect for the rights of all. Conscious of this, the Church champions the fundamental rights of each person. In particular, she promotes and defends respect for the life and the religious freedom of everyone.
It's important that the human person be in the middle of the creation.
Cardinal Renato Raffaele Martino heads the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace, which helps draw up this important annual message. He notes that Pope Benedict uses the term an ecology of peace to describe the relationship between God, human beings, and the rest of creation.
Pope John Paul II spoke about the human ecology, stressing the importance of the human being in the frame of the environment. And now Pope Benedict tells us that there is an ecology for peace, of peace, and this expands the discussion, the study about all the problems and the situations that where the human being is in contact. And so coming from that, there is the discussion of the sources for energy. And so we know that the world is progressing with this development. Everybody needs more and more energy. And there are peoples who lack sources of energy. And so the situation can be very, very difficult for many peoples. And again, ecology of peace tells us that we have to face all those problems and try to solve them. And this is a call to help those countries who need help in order to become protagonists of their future.
Wars are often caused by a lack of resources, usually water or power resources such as oil.
Bishop Malcolm McMahon is president of the British section of Pax Christi, the International Justice and Peace Network. He says the link between the pressing questions of ecology and the environment and the root causes of conflict provide a powerful and pertinent focus for this message.
It's really the use of those resources which also affect the way in which our planet survives, the way in which the climate changes, and so on. So he's made a very interesting connection here between those two concerns, that of global warming and ecology, and the issues which often are the causes of war. Inevitably, I think he's thinking of the Middle East and the way in which the West always keeps an eye on the Middle East because of its oil resources. The intervention in Iraq by the coalition forces is undoubtedly connected with this. The alliances which are made between Western countries and rather unsavory regimes are often based on this need for oil. So he's really once again touched on a very important issue. He's gone straight to the heart of the matter here. And I think that that it's very pertinent that he raises these issues at the moment.
The suffering of those caught in the conflicts of the Middle East were mentioned specifically in this Peace Day message. Referring to the war which engulfed southern Lebanon last summer, the Pope dedicates a section to the need for effective international laws that can safeguard the lives and the rights of civilians. Cardinal Martino again.
In the recent war in Lebanon, the principles and the conventions for humanitarian law were not observed. And so this is the reason that he recommends the observance of the existing humanitarian law and also encourages to develop this humanitarian law, taking into account of the new situations that we can have from terrorist attacks and whatever. And so this is important, and the Pope exhorts the international community to do whatever could be done to improve the situation.
Another serious threat to peace in today's world is the continuing nuclear build-up by some nations, which Pope Benedict says harks back to the profound anxieties of the Cold War period. He insists that accords on nuclear non-proliferation must go hand in hand with a determined commitment to seek the definitive dismantling of existing weapons and warheads.
To all those who possess nuclear weapons, he is stressing what the Holy See has been doing for years and years. During my 16 years at United Nations, every year I made an intervention in favor of nuclear disarmament. And I was speaking in the name of the Holy See. So it's something that is not new. So the Pope wanted to stress, because we see that the discussion came to the fore, and so he wanted to remind that deterrence, if you keep it for long, becomes itself unacceptable.
Another section of this message focuses on the need to recognise the essential equality of all human persons, springing from their common transcendental dignity. In particular, the Pope condemns exploitation and discrimination against women as key to the promotion of secure and lasting peace. American lawyer and university professor Marianne Glendon is president of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, the first woman to head any such Vatican organization.
When I heard that the Pope had mentioned women in that way in the World Day of Peace message, the first thought that occurred to me was that He is in that great tradition of political thought that goes back to Alexis de Tocqueville. Tocqueville was the first person who said, you must never underestimate the political importance of women. That was a very dramatic insight and very true. And you see how this great intellectual, who is now our Pope, following another great intellectual, both of them have given a great deal of attention to women, not only in terms of the questions relating to feminism, but in terms of women's role within a healthy and functioning polity. So I was very excited to see it in the World Day of Peace message, and I think it's a sign that he will continue the tradition of John Paul II of addressing issues relating to women, keeping women in the discussion.
Marianne Glendon is also inspired by Pope Benedict's use of the phrase ecology of peace in this message. She says it underlines the need for all of us to promote a culture of life and of human dignity.
Yes, and we might also mention that John Paul II used this term in Centesimus Annus, the ecology of freedom. And why have so many of us who are interested in Catholic social thought adopted the word ecology? Because we understand that culture is crucially important, that culture is prior to economics, it is prior to politics, and that if you don't have a healthy culture, you will not have a healthy economic system and you won't have a vibrant democracy. So this word ecology helps us to keep many factors in play.
Finally, in his message for World Peace Day 2007, Pope Benedict calls on all Christians to work tirelessly for peace and for the defence of the dignity and rights of the human person, rights which are so often threatened and denied by hunger, oppression and conflict, but also, he says, by abortion, euthanasia and embryo experimentation. Bishop Malcolm McMahon says all these concerns form an integral part of the same moral vision which must underpin our search for peace in contemporary society.
The whole of that area is in fact a seamless garment. And if we're going to respect life, then we have to respect it from the moment of conception right through to the moment when we go to the Lord. And it's very easy for us, because of expediency and because of pressures of modern society and economic pressures, political pressures and so on, to start adjusting our principles. That's why it's so important, I think, for us to understand that human life is a gift which is given to us, and it's not something that we can dabble with, that we can create for ourselves or mess about in any way. We really have to accept that it's a gift from God. Once you do that, I think, and get your principles right, then the rest follows.
And my thanks there to Bishop Malcolm McMahon, to Professor Marianne Glendon, and to Cardinal Renato Raffaele Martino, head of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. Now, though the spotlight on Bethlehem as the place of Christ's birth may be over for another year, Christians living in the region are increasingly worried by the number of families emigrating from the Holy Land each year. Some even fear that the Christian population there could become extinct within three generations. In 1950, Christians formed approximately 15% of the population in the Holy Land. They now form less than 2%. And nowhere is this mass exodus of Christians more dramatic than in Bethlehem itself. My colleague Susie Hodges has been finding out why the Christians are leaving the Holy Land and what is being done to try and stem this flow.
More than 2,000 years after the first nativity, how many Christians are living in the land of Jesus' birth? It's a question many are asking, as surveys warn that in a couple of generations, there might be no longer a living community of Christians left in the Holy Land. Palestinian Christians have been leaving the area for decades, mostly because of economic pressures and using the helping hand of family ties in the West. But now there are additional political and economic factors that have caused this exodus to accelerate in the past few years. These factors include the current political stalemate in the Palestinian-Israeli peace process, the economic embargo against the Hamas-led government, the blockades, and the separation barrier. Bernard Sabella is a Palestinian Christian and sociologist who teaches at the Pontifical University in Bethlehem. He says the lack of peace and stability is the key factor in encouraging more and more Palestinian Christians to turn their back on their native land.
We are people who would like to see peace come to the Holy Land. We feel that without peace, we cannot make any economic, social, and other kinds of progress. Especially, we cannot make jobs for our young people who tend to leave in search of jobs.
Father Peter Vasco is the director of the Franciscan Foundation for the Holy Land that was formed to safeguard the basic human rights and continued presence of the Christian minority living in the Holy Land. He says that the tiny Christian community feel caught in the middle of the ongoing Israeli-Palestinian conflict and accuse the international community of ignoring their plight.
I think Christians in the Holy Land feel abandoned and ignored by the Christian West simply because when, for example, Americans think of the problem over there, they think of Muslim versus Israelis. And since Israel is an ally of the United States, obviously we side with Israel as Americans. And indirectly, what we're doing, we're hurting the Christian Palestinians. It's not a deliberate thought or anything done, you know, premeditated. It just happens, and therefore those Christians are sort of left out in the cold. And you have to understand that the Israeli government looks upon Christian Palestinians as Arabs, as Palestinians, and hence suspicious and perhaps the enemy. Where on the other hand, the Muslim Palestinians, a lot of their neighbors, not everybody, but a lot of the neighbors, Muslim neighbors, look upon them as traitors to the Islamic cause and pro-West. So they're sort of caught between the hammer and the anvil, and they're getting the pounding, so they're sort of being squeezed out by the two parties that are affecting them.
The majority of those Christians emigrating from the Holy Land come from the Bethlehem area, where, as Father Peter explains, there has been a dramatic reduction in the number of Christian residents over the past three decades.
Well, in the last 2 years, we know that 500 families from Bethlehem have left the Holy Land. So there's 1,000 families, Christian families, that have already left from Bethlehem. We have to remember that 35 years ago, Bethlehem had a ratio of 80% Christian and 20% Muslim. It is now 9% Christian and 91% Muslim. The majority of people who are leaving are from Bethlehem itself. There are some, of course, from Jerusalem, but our statistics in the last few years has been basically from Bethlehem.
Presumably here, the separation barrier must be a major factor because it's basically cut off Bethlehem, hasn't it, from Jerusalem?
Yes, it has. It has been a terrible thing for the people because many of the people in Bethlehem were working in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and Haifa, and now they are not able to cross over. A lot of the hospitals are also in Jerusalem, and obviously they're not permitted to cross into Jerusalem from Bethlehem, which is causing a lot of medical problems, a lot of deaths, etc., etc. And the question that we have to ask, I think, is at what price do you punish an entire people for the crimes of maybe a dozen or so criminals or Hamas militants? The average Palestinian person, a Christian, Muslim, are hardworking, responsible people. But unfortunately, the Israeli authorities, such as the Israeli military, doesn't look at it that way.
His views are echoed by Sabella, who says the separation barrier is stifling the life of a once thriving town like Bethlehem and is doing nothing to promote peace between Israelis and Palestinians.
The separation barrier is really something that makes the heart ache, that makes us really very sad, because it separates Bethlehem from its twin city, Jerusalem, and on the more practical economic and population mobility, it does not allow for free movement between Bethlehem and Jerusalem. And this has very bad economic repercussions on Bethlehem, especially when pilgrims, people who visit Rome, who like to visit Bethlehem also, and Jerusalem, do not have this freedom of moving around. Besides, the aesthetic value of seeing a wall around the nativity town of Jesus Christ is such a painful thing. You know, who would want to have a wall surrounding the nativity town of Bethlehem? So if you have the wall and you have the checkpoints, then the biggest question becomes, how can peace arrive? How can we make peace if we are going to live only by checkpoints and walls? Security for Israel, in my opinion, does not come from the wall. It comes from a vision of peace that is shared by Israel and the Palestinians and that can move us forward. And I see that the role of the church in this and the role of Palestinian Christians is how to advance this vision of peace between Palestinians and Israelis.
Muslims form the overwhelming majority of the population in the West Bank and Gaza Strip. But how are relations in general between Christians and Muslims in Palestine? Father Peter again.
When you talk about cooperation between Muslims and Christians, I'd like to preface it by saying that a lot of Muslims consider the Christians as pro-West, you know, not helpful towards the Islamic cause, or they consider them as traitors. But there's an equal amount of Palestinian Muslims who are trying to work with the Christians, who are friends with Christians, etc., etc. There's no major hate between the two groupings. They're Palestinians by nationality. They're both suffering the same effect of the occupation, and that unites them to a certain extent. But there are undercurrents from time to time that rise above the current and show this negativity of Muslims against Christians. But for the most part, they get along rather well.
Most of those Christians emigrating from the Holy Land are young adults. And Sabella says he personally knows many Christian friends and neighbours who have either already left or are thinking of emigrating to other countries.
If you go around Bethlehem and Jerusalem, you would find primarily young people, sometimes married young people in their early 30s, late 20s, early 30s, who are professionals, who have said, I'm going. And when you ask them, why are you going? For example, my neighbor and his wife and three young children left. And he said, because I do not see a prospect for my children. And I think that the political situation is not going to help anybody to stay put in this land.
Sabella says what is needed is a new mindset on both the Israeli and Palestinian sides to try to resolve the current political deadlock.
When you have an internal Palestinian deadlock, that doesn't give us hope for a good economic prospects and good political prospects in negotiations with Israel. And on the Israeli side, when you have an obsession with security and you don't have leadership that can bring about a serious political change, a dramatic political change in relations with the Palestinians, this also does not give us hope. And when both this deadlock in Palestine and in Israel does not contribute to a kind of a stable social economic environment, then certainly young people, promising young people, would want to leave. Therefore, I think the challenge is how to get Palestinians and Israelis to a point where they can make peace. I am optimistic that on the Palestinian side, the formation of a national unity government would stop the blockade, the economic blockade. I'm hopeful that on the Israeli side, the people in Israel who are for a peaceful resolution of the conflict
rather than a military solution to the conflict, would dominate and would lead Israel into a different era. And I'm hopeful that the international community, headed by the U.S. administration, would do something to advance the peace prospects in Palestine, Israel.
Father Peter says the foundation he heads is trying to stop this exodus of young people by providing scholarships and housing to persuade Christians to remain in the land of their birth.
The majority of people who are leaving are the young adults. And this is why, for example, why the Franciscan Foundation is focusing in on the high school people, especially those who are seniors and who want to go to college. We're providing a college education for these young people so that they can be productive members of society upon graduation. And I'm very pleased to mention that 65% of the last four classes that we have graduated in the various local universities, 65% of them now have jobs as dentists, as pharmacists, as engineers, architects, business people, educators. And so there's sort of a light at the end of the tunnel here in the Holy Land. We're just beginning to see that. And the foundation was the first organization to really be concerned about the exodus. And now we're seeing some very positive results. And these young people now are staying because now they have a job. And we're the foundation, along with the Franciscan Custody, are building housing units for these young people. So we're really trying to help our people, as well as the Orthodox, as well as the other Protestant religions. As you know, the Catholic Church is always universal in its attempt to help people. And this is not just for Catholics. It's a Christian problem. And if we don't take care of our Christians, there will be no Christians in the Holy Land. All we're going to be having are empty religious monuments and museums.
Sabella says despite all the daily difficulties faced by the Palestinian population, both Muslim and Christian, he personally has never been tempted to leave the Holy Land.
Personally, I never felt that I would want to live anywhere else. I studied in the USA for 11 years, and I always felt my place is in Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Palestine.
Sabella and others like him are proof that not all the Christians living in the Holy Land are seeking to emigrate. But given this continuing exodus of Christians, is there a viable future for the Christian community in the land where their faith was born? Despite all the gloomy statistics, Father Peter remains cautiously optimistic.
Well, based on the results of what the foundation is doing and other people are doing, we are certainly making a dent. We are certainly slowly but surely providing those needed programs and projects for our young people to remain. And so, yes, I see some light at the end of the tunnel. 10 years ago, I was very pessimistic. Now, 10 years later, I see that through college education, through finding them jobs and building housing, our young people are the ones that we have helped are staying. We're not going to stop the Christian exodus. It's going to continue, but, you know, we're slowly but surely arresting this problem. And I feel very confident, very positive about that.
Susie Hodges was talking there to Father Peter Vasco, director of the Franciscan Foundation for the Holy Land, and to Bernard Sabella of the Pontifical University in Bethlehem. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English program of Vatican Radio. Have a happy and peaceful New Year.